This is Christian Robillard, and you're listening to Beyond the Bake Sale, where we help you raise more time, talent, and treasure in innovative, creative, and effective ways for the causes you care about.
Hello, this is Adam Janes, Volunteer Engagement Consultant for Beyond the Bake Sale. I'm guest hosting for Christian for this special volunteer management COVID-19 conversation. For this episode, I sat down with one of the world's leading experts on volunteer management, Rob Jackson. Rob Jackson has been a leader in the volunteer movement for 25 years, leading locally, nationally, and internationally. Rob has worked for 6 years, most of which as Director of Development at Volunteer England, raising £3 million, leading a merger with Student Volunteer England, and instrumental in establishing the groundbreaking Volunteer Rights Inquiry. In 2011, Rob established Rob Jackson Consulting Limited and now provides service on a range of topics with strategic volunteer engagement at the core, working in the UK, United States, Canada, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. Rob writes extensively for the field, co-authoring the Complete Volunteer Manager Handbook. Rob has his own blog while also sitting as editor-in-chief of evolunteerism.com. Rob co-wrote From the Top Down UK edition with respected American author and consultant Susan J. Ellis. Finally, Rob also spends his time as an active volunteer himself, previously serving as chair of governors at a Lincolnshire primary school, and is the founder and moderator of UK VPM, an email networking response for volunteer managers in the UK. In this episode, we talk about COVID-19, its wide-reaching impact on the charitable sector. Who is out there volunteering in this stay-at-home reality? How will COVID-19 ultimately reshape volunteerism? And what can volunteer managers do during this time? Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoy this episode. Good afternoon, Rob, and welcome to Beyond the Bake Sale. Thank you for your time today.
Hi, Adam. Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be with you today.
So we met in what seems like another world. Last year here in Ottawa, you were here for the National Volunteer Conference, and things seemed kind of the way they were meant to be. And I think one thing for sure, traveling seemed like such a simple thing at the time. So how are your reflections on thinking of your world before COVID?
Yeah, well, the world in some ways got a much smaller place, become a much smaller place because we're all operating from our homes and we can still connect through all of this this technology, which thankfully we have these days. And most of the internet networks seem to be able to be holding up on it. But it's certainly a very strange time, and it seems quite odd to think of the travel plans that I had in place for the next couple of months and that we took for granted, just kind of shrinking the world down very significantly as all the airlines get grounded. It's definitely a real cliche at the best of times, but definitely at the moment it's a really interesting and strange time to be living through.
It is for sure. As we hit record today, we're really at the height of it in both the UK and Canada, where you're residing from the UK and I'm here in Canada. Yeah. We only know, only time will tell how much worse this is going to get, but we can say as we record that we're in the middle of this now. How are people holding up in the UK? What's the main story around your world today?
I think generally people seem to be okay, but we're only 10 days into lockdown. So whether that's still the case when we're 10 weeks into lockdown, I don't really know. I mean, I think there's possibly a bit of an underestimation of the impact on a lot of people's mental health that this is going to have. But right now, the government here reckons we're a couple of weeks away from the top of the upswing on the graph. On the curve that we're all supposed to be flattening. So I think, like a lot of countries, it's going to get worse before it gets better. But the situation in terms of the response in British society has been phenomenal. I was talking with a few people earlier this week about how just over a week ago now, the UK government put out a request for a quarter of a million volunteers to help with an NHS volunteer responder program. And within a few days, had to put recruitment on hold because they'd already hit 750,000, which is a kind of response to volunteering in this country that I don't think we've ever seen in peacetime, ever, really. It's quite phenomenal to see the way in which people are responding. And I saw something on one of the newspapers this morning that said the movies got it wrong. When the pandemic hit, we all turned to helping each other rather than fighting each other. And I think that's a great reflection on society at the moment, certainly here in the UK. Can't speak for any other countries because I'm not there and I can't go there.
This is true. Knowing the local response, it really gives you a faith in humanity that we were hoping was there when we need it. But sometimes I think
in regular life before this happened, people got kind of comfortable. And we weren't really knowing if we needed to rely on each other or not, because we were pretty self-reliant for the most part. So in our original plan, we were going to talk about government relations and the support for the volunteer sector. But with what's going on, we've definitely agreed that a pivoting into talking about COVID-19 is the way to go. So I wanted to dive in with you and ask you the big question, because we know history is being made right now in one way or in a lot of ways. Where were you when you realized what was going on was going to change everything?
I'm quite open to admitting that kind of when we were in January, February, even early March time, I kind of didn't really see this as bringing about the kind of seismic shift that it probably has. I think for me, it kind of struck home a couple of weeks ago when the government started, the UK government anyway, started a significant shift in its approach away from the kind of herd immunity mentality to actually we have to act in order to protect our health service from being completely overwhelmed. And I think, you know, we went quite quickly from things beginning to tighten up a bit to a week later being a lot tighter in terms of, I don't like calling it social distancing, but physical distancing and the kind of lockdown restrictions. And I think that's really where it kind of hit hard for me. And I think it's where it really kind of hit hard for a lot of people. But reflecting on it, one of the things I've been amazed at is, you know, we're really only, most of us, 2 or 3 weeks into the major change in the way that we live our lives. And yet we have adapted phenomenally quickly to that. And that is, you know, a real testament to our ability as individuals and as human beings and as a society to shift when these changes come along. In terms of adapting and realizing the bigger implications of this, I don't think most of us are even there yet. I think we can't even begin to imagine how this is going to change the world around us. It's guesswork at this stage.
For sure. We've all had to adapt and adjust. And so what I like to ask a lot of people is, are they settling into a new quarantine routine? So what would you describe your quarantine routine as, like, from your day to day? What are you doing differently? And what are you doing to keep yourself kind of balanced?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, as a consultant who's mainly based from home anyway, apart from the occasional foray out to work with clients, my quarantine routine is pretty much the same as my pre-quarantine routine, just with less travel involved. I think the main kind of shift in the way that my life's being lived at the moment is I'm attending a lot more meetings and phone calls than I did before all of this, because that's much more how the work's being done. It's in things like, as we've said a couple of times already, that we took for granted before this, is pivoting from having the grocery shopping delivered once a week to actually having to go out and collect it, and do the grocery shopping and just not having the freedom to walk the dog as often as you want and what have you. Other than that, the routine is still pretty much the same. And I've purposefully tried to make sure that I get up at a reasonable hour Monday to Friday. I put in a day's work. I finish at a sensible time. I think if, like a lot of people, I was having to just sit around on the couch watching Netflix day in, day out for 12 weeks, I would probably be going a bit spare, really, but that's just the way I'm wired.
I can imagine. So in keeping that routine and keeping kind of on the wheels moving, do you have any mantras or a main focus that you kind of keeps you going forward?
Yeah, I think at the moment, my main focus is twofold. One is being there for people that need it at this time. You know, a lot of people that we work with and our networks in the volunteer engagement world are running to stand still and pivoting to adapt their way of working to the new world and the pressures that are being placed upon it, with volunteers stepping down or not being able to work and demand increasing. And the demands that's placing on many volunteer engagement professionals at the moment, my focus is kind of in part about how can I be here to help and support those people, even if it's just somebody on the end of the phone that they can pick up the phone and scream at, you know, just to get it out of their system professionally. The other area of my focus, which is kind of really dominating at the moment, is starting to do the thinking that, again, maybe a lot of those people can't do because of the busyness that they're in day in, day out, which is when things have calmed down a bit over the course of the next few months and we've adapted, or next few weeks even, sorry, and we've adapted to this new normal, how do we need to start directing our effort to influencing so that when we come out of this, volunteer engagement is stronger and our societies are stronger as a result, and not that we are the first ones to be cast aside when the budget cuts come and when the prioritization of fundraising and income generation becomes even greater. And I think a lot of people are just too busy to be in that headspace at the moment, but I can be. So I'm trying to do some of that thinking and talking to people and so that I'm there for them when they need it.
It ties in perfectly with the next question here. And as a volunteer management expert, what were your first thoughts to what was going to happen in the voluntary sector?
Yeah, we were going to lose a lot of volunteers. And not necessarily because they're all going to fall victim to COVID-19, but people are going to have to be self-isolating. I mean, here in the UK, I don't quite know what the situation is in Canada, but certainly anybody over the age of 70 has basically been advised to stay home and not leave the house for 12 weeks. Well, that's a huge number of a lot of organisations' volunteer corps. So lots of organisations have suddenly found themselves without a lot of the volunteers that they were expecting. As I was saying, at exactly the time that the demand for their services has gone up. So I think that's a big shift. That we weren't ready for. I think the way that a lot of organizations are now trying to pivot to online and virtual volunteering, which is something, you know, Jane Cravens in the States has been arguing that that's something we should have been looking at for 20 or 30 years. And a lot of us are now in a position of playing catch up. And I think the other way that it's changing is, you know, there's this kind of belief here in the UK that people don't volunteer. We want the state to do things, whether it's through the NHS or social care. And I think the outpouring of things like 750,000 people towards the NHS volunteer responders and all the informal volunteering that goes on just demonstrates people do want to volunteer. They just didn't want to do what we were offering. And I think that's a big change we are going to have to get used to, that when people want to volunteer and when people need to volunteer at the moment and when we need them to volunteer, we have to do everything we can to minimize the bureaucracy that we've relied upon so long to give us kind of form and structure to our work. And I think that's going to be a big change for all of us going forwards. And then the final one, I suppose, is here we have this coronavirus job retention scheme where charities, amongst other employers, can furlough their employees on 8% of their pay, which the government will cover. And a lot of charities are doing that in order to reduce costs, but of course still have services deliver, so the volunteers are being asked to step up. And that's really twisting our perspective on things like job substitution, because no longer are volunteers being seen as a threat to paid jobs. They're the way of actually making sure people have paid jobs at the end of this. So I think that's just kind of three or four areas where I see this change coming. But I think there'll be even more as we adapt to this over the course of the coming couple of months ahead of us.
So with that, there are some stories that are coming out of your society and your communities about who is volunteering and what's happening kind of at the ground level.
Yeah, about who is volunteering, I don't know so much. I mean, I'm aware of a couple of initiatives that are going to kick off in the next couple of weeks about starting to collect hopefully some trackable data over the coming months about volunteering and about what's happening. I think there's a lot that we don't know at the moment in terms of whether or not we're really seeing a lot of over 70-year-olds stopping, or they've switched to online volunteering, or whether we've seen a big step up of young people, for example. But I can relate to you one example of my experience. I volunteered pretty much as soon as this NHS volunteer responder scheme was announced. Took me 10 minutes to apply online. They vetted me because I provided them with a copy of my driving license, which they could check against our driver standards agency website. I was approved within 30 hours. I was ready to go. We haven't got any work yet, which is a little bit frustrating a week on, but it was a seamless, easy process. It's another organization who put out an urgent call for volunteers on the 19th of March, and I applied that same day, and I've heard nothing else since. So I think people are getting lots of these different experiences from kind of high tech, quick, but maybe not immediate in providing the roles, to very slow, traditional, for want of a better phrase, approaches to just forming a Facebook group and helping local neighbours. So I think people's experience is very, very different, but it would be good to get some more research to kind of understand how this is fundamentally changing volunteering.
Yeah, and I feel, as you're saying that, there'd be lots to look at as to how organizations along the process, maybe we're getting really good at recruiting at a time like this, but not so good at implementing people into work and that transition. And how can we not just onboard people, but get them out doing the work that we've called them to.
Yeah. And whether this, for some of those over 70-year-olds, and, you know, I was talking to somebody this week, this may be, you know, they're very duty, very service-oriented. They don't like to let us down. The fact that they now can't volunteer because of their own social isolation requirements or the restrictions their organizations have put in place for their programs, this may be the opportunity that many of them have secretly been looking for to take a step back from volunteering full stop. So it's not just that traditional core may have stopped temporarily until this goes away. They may have stopped and they ain't coming back.
Who knows when we'll be able to come back as well.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Some timelines are uncertain. So in these times, people are often looking for advice. And as a recognized professional in the field, when the volunteer managers that seek out your advice come to you, what's the first message that you give to them?
That's a really good question. The first message that I'm giving to them, or that I'm wanting to give to them, is when the time is right, make sure you make the space to think. And I qualify it with when the time is right because of the point I was making earlier that so many people are just so under it. But I think it's fundamentally important for anyone who's in a volunteer engagement role, individually in their organization, collectively through their local networks or their state province networks, their national networks, to start to do the thinking now about what our role is in the end game of this, both in society and in our organizations and sector, because we cannot leave that thinking until we're already in the end game, because it will be too late. And as appalling as the situation we find ourselves in around the world at the moment, there is a huge opportunity for us here to really demonstrate the impact and the value and the importance of properly thought out strategic volunteer engagement in a way that we probably haven't had the opportunity to do before. And so to suggest to people, my advice to people is to, when you can, find the time to do that thinking, to connect with others to do that thinking, so that we have the arguments in place to make sure that our organizations don't cast volunteering aside in pursuit of the pound and the dollar that's needed to refill budgets when COVID-19 becomes a thing of the past, but that actually we can come out of this, as the world will come out of this, stronger because we come out of it different and better than how we went in.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I feel like some of the themes you're talking about are going to be on a lot of hearts and minds as we carry into these long weeks ahead. And
yeah.
I think there'll be some excellent resources being developed from yourself, I'm sure, and other experts around the world on doing that proper thinking and using the time to re-enter the next chapter with strength and vitality, for sure.
Yeah.
So we're going to transition into now just that, is the world's going to move on, and we're going to have to create a new rhythms, routines, because it's safe to say that we're in the middle of this now. The middle, we're not sure if it's the middle of the middle or the beginning of the middle. only time will give us that answer, but we're in the thick of it. Have you seen people, specifically organizations, maybe pivot or be able to mobilize better than others? And if you could give an example of somebody who's done a turn of face into this reaction to address the problems of today.
Yeah, and it's a really timely question because I was looking at something this morning from an organization I've been really privileged to do some work with up in Scotland over the last couple of years. They're called CHAS, Children's Hospices Against Scotland, and I was emailing with Morven, their head of volunteering, this morning, and she was sharing with me some work they have done just in the last week or two to set up what they think is the country's first virtual children's hospice. CHAS is a children's hospice across Scotland, so that's what CHAS stands for. Mm. They provide hospice care facilities for children and young people across Scotland, but they also recognise, as is the case with hospice care around the world, that over the last few years, more and more of it has been transitioning to community-based care, so looking after children and young people in their own homes quite often. And because of the health restrictions and quarantine requirements, many of those young people can't access, many of their families can't access the hospices physically in the way that they maybe did. So they've been doing everything they can to use technology to provide as much of those services as possible to those families in their own homes using technology. And they're describing it as a virtual children's hospice. And I think that, you know, that's just A, it's a phenomenal use of the technology, but B, it just shows the innovation and creativity that can come out of the kind of extreme times that we face at the moment. For them, where a lot of their traditional volunteers have had to stop because they weren't able to come into the hospice anymore, because it wasn't safe to have lots of people in the hospice anymore, they're hoping that many of those volunteers will now transition to do very similar roles to what they did before, but as online virtual volunteering roles.
Yeah, that's excellent. I could see volunteers that have a relationship with the kids up until this point could then call in and be a real comfort to spend some time, even if it's an inside joke or, you know, something to help the kids just not focus on their day-to-day struggle or whatever they're facing.
Yeah, and for me, that was just a brilliant example of an organization that they're struggling, their income's suffering, they've lost volunteers, but they are really innovating in how they go about things so that they remain relevant to their client base and they remain relevant to the children, young people and families that rely on them. And I think that's where our sector, non-profit world charity sector is fundamentally different from so many of the other sectors. And certainly the private sector is that, you know, we keep that focus on the people that we're there to serve first and foremost. And, you know, kudos to Chas for the way that they're doing that, really.
Yeah, certainly. And if not in these times, we don't show the heart of what we're doing. People can surely look to these stories and see on the evening news the chants going out at 7 o'clock for healthcare workers and that our communities have a connection that maybe needs to be celebrated and also connected through the work that we're doing. Innovation is a word that came up in that question. And in times like this, you hear that new things happen, new innovations. We're hearing like from the medical world, they're creating faster, more innovative ways to create product. Have you heard of any innovations in the charitable sector at this time? And have you heard of the term caremongering?
I haven't heard about caremongering. Tell me more.
Sure. So that's a term that's come up here. And it's kind of a vigilante type of volunteerism. That's if you look at Facebook and look up the neighborhoods, they're putting up caremongering groups where people can sign up and say, if you have a need, put it up here. And then people can look at it and see if they can help make that happen. So it's a bit of a gut response from people in the community who just want to help, but don't necessarily know which channels to go through it. So I always called them do-gooders, but I think caremonger is the new innovative term in the COVID era.
I like it.
So you might hear that coming up a few times.
Yeah, I love it. I love things. I remember Susan Ellis telling me years ago about she'd heard somebody coin the phrase skillanthropy, which was, you know, philanthropy, but using professional skills-based volunteering, which I thought was lovely. So any of those kind of cool new terms I thought was quite good. It's really difficult in terms of picking up on innovation the moment, because I think I struggle to keep abreast of everything that's happening just in the volunteering world day in, day out globally on what's going on at the moment. That is not to say that there isn't innovation happening. I'm sure there is. But I think for me, the kind of Chas example is not unique, but is not rare, because we so much of the way that we go about things as a society and as nonprofit organizations just demonstrates that we've been so, I think you used the word earlier with the world that we've left behind. We were just kind of so comfortable in the way of doing things that it's not that we don't have the capacity and the knowledge and the ability to innovate, but we're still kind of getting through that typical change curve shock of the way that things are at the moment. So I think we're going to see a lot more innovation coming over the course of the next couple of months. What's been heartening is to see the way that people have been harnessing some of the kind of tools that were already available to start to support each other and start to engage with each other in a way that probably would never only really have been done at things like, you know, the VMPC conference last year, or Points of Light in the US, or the ABM conference here, in order to be able to kind of share those ideas and get the discussions going and get the creative juices flowing. And I think the other thing that's been difficult is lots of people have been laid off at the same time as well. So some of that capacity, some of that knowledge for doing the innovation has kind of walked out the door in the last couple of weeks as organisations have tightened their belts in the short term. So I think it's not that there isn't innovation going on. I think we will see it. I don't think it's happening en masse in the way that it probably needs to do at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. Perhaps in a future episode, we might be able to revisit the things we learned, the things that we weren't sure what we were doing at the time, but have turned out to become innovative practices.
Yeah. And, you know, I know Jane Cravens put a post out on Twitter the other day. There are a lot of people talking about this innovative new idea of virtual volunteering, which is so innovative. It's been around for 30 years.
Yeah.
So some of the innovations are old innovations that we're rediscovering out of necessity now. So they're not necessarily new innovations. So I suppose it depends on the angle you look at it from.
That's true. We all have that odd tool at the back of our toolbox that we weren't sure what it did until we needed it. Yeah. All right. So we're going to start heading to the last section of the interview and kind of like planning our landing. We all feel like we're in a bit of a storm. There's lots of turbulence. We don't really know where the ground is, but we really do have to prepare for landing.
Yeah.
I think part of it is that we can all admit as a globe, we're probably in a bit of shock. I mean, we know that there's deaths happening and hospitals are being overrun, and there's a bit of us that are probably going to have an emotional roller coaster going through this time. The economy, like you mentioned, lots of jobs are changing. So in this time, for charities, for volunteer managers, what can you say to help people kind of believe in the fact that there will be a landing point at the end of this season?
Yeah, well, I think just generally we know from the medical knowledge that's around about COVID-19, that this is something that we will come out of this at the end of it. We're in a with the tools that we have as a global society and with the brains that we have around the world, there will be an end to this. And I think that's the important thing for a lot of people to hang on to at the moment, that you know, whether that manifests itself in finally you'll be able to see your kids or your loved ones again because you can't physically see them at the moment. I think it's really important to hold on to that sense of bigger hope at the moment. When you scale it down to the sector, I think there is a kind of alluded to earlier on. And when I say the sector, I'm meaning the kind of non-profit, charity, voluntary and community sector, civil society world that goes by many different names.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the point at which societies in a lot of the countries that I work in will realize how fundamental those organizations are to day-to-day life, just generally, back before all of this happened. You know, there used to be a thing over here of frustration when they were referred to as the third sector, private sector being the first and the public sector being the second, and it kind of implied that we were the bottom of the heap. And I think people are going to realize that in the same way that they're going to realize that the most important people in our societies are the healthcare and key workers, not the multimillionaires, celebrities and reality TV stars. And I think for us, what we can take hope in as volunteer engagement professionals is people do want to volunteer. You know, it's not that all volunteering has stopped overnight. People do volunteer. People are going to volunteer. People are still going to want to volunteer at the end of it. Hopefully there'll be a huge outpouring of community spirit and looking after everybody else, not just after number one, that will characterize our societies at the other side of this. And therefore there is a role for us as volunteer engagement professionals, and whether that is in a paid or voluntary capacity to facilitate that. And I think that's really encouraging. That is there. We just have to put the effort in and do the thinking, as I was saying earlier, and do the hard work to make sure that we are in the best position possible, partly for ourselves and for our profession, but predominantly to help our organisations and our communities rebound even stronger. And I think for me, that sense that we could be playing a role that is so fundamental to what our world looks like, whatever it looks like when this is all over, in a way that many other roles might not, is really, really exciting and fills me with a lot of enthusiasm.
Amazing. And I think you answered about five of my questions in that answer as I was going through. So thinking of that, the priority for volunteer managers at the end of this, it's really, if I can summarize what you said, is to basically set the table and invite people back into the great work that was being done. Maybe it'll look different. Maybe the decor is entirely changed, or the nature of what we're doing might be slightly different than what it was before, but the invitations need to go out nonetheless, and the volunteer managers have to be ready to inspire and engage and lead those movements as we get back to a socially and physically included world.
Yeah. And we are going to have, around the world, we are going to have a subject to talk on which we all have something in common and touches every area of our lives and on which we are all on the same side. And that is, you know, how we got through what happened to us and how we think the whole COVID-19 situation is going to change the world. And I don't think that's ever happened to this scale really ever before. And there's a lot of joke over here that with people longing for the good old days when we talked about the division of Brexit. And, you know, whatever your opinion on that, you were one side or the other. There is no one side or the other on COVID-19. Everybody's against it. Everybody's trying to get us out of it as quickly as possible. And I think that that unifying force is going to be really, really powerful and something that, that we can, as kind of volunteer managers, can harness in our work.
Yeah, certainly. We're all in this together type messaging, but also you can't deny it. So in that, before we go, I want to give you an opportunity to say anything else that you'd like to the audience, to friends and colleagues that might be tuning in as we wrap up our time together. Just a message maybe from you to the world.
Everybody's in a very difficult position at the moment. Everybody's dealing with, somebody said something I read the other day said that that level of discomfort that we've all got right now, that's grief, whether we've known it before or not, grief for the world that we have that's gone. And grief that we don't yet understand kind of where things are going to be in the future. And, you know, I know from grief, from loss of loved ones in my own family, that that only gets better over time. So I think my kind of the message of hope that I'm certainly holding on to is this will go away. We will get through this. We will get out the other side of this. I am firmly of the opinion that we will have in the UK, we will have a much better society on the other side of this than we did before. And if this is the pain that we have to go through to get to that world, which won't be perfect but will be better, then it's worth the inconvenience of the few months being locked behind our front doors that we have. But I think, as specifically to volunteer engagement professionals, I kind of slightly hesitate in saying it, but this is our moment. This is where we can step up. This is where we can make even more of a difference today to our societies than we've ever done before. And this is where we can really seize this opportunity to transform our profession so that, you know, in 10 years' time, when we're sat on an airplane and somebody turns to us and say, what do you do for a living? And you say, I'm a volunteer manager. They go, oh, yeah, I know what that is. That was so important during COVID-19 and when we came out of it, rather than the usual kind of embarrassment that we get where they just ask if we get paid. So I think there's a big, big moment for us here. We mustn't miss that opportunity.
Well said. And I concur and agree 100% with those sentiments, and carrying forward that we both have to be engaging in the feeling of what's going on, but also in the feet on the ground action that we need to take. So it's no time to kind of sit back and relax in a sense, but definitely a time to engage. And I think that's a great word that we can kind of rally around, is that engagement will help many people in this situation, but also help us reorganize as society kind of reintegrates back. So I want to thank you so much for this time and for taking time out of an uncertain time to answer some of these questions and use some of your perspective and professionalism to really give some answers to, I feel, the charitable sector, but also for volunteer managers specifically, that they can really take the time and to think, to connect, to realize that this is part of the calling of a volunteer manager, to be in these times to be a leader and lead volunteers into what needs to be done in times like this. So thank you. Really appreciate the time, and look forward to continuing this conversation into the future.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey, everyone. Christian here with a few short things before you take off. A big thanks for tuning into another episode of Beyond the Bake Sale. Did you love the episode? Then we'd be grateful for a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. Don't want to miss our next episode? Then make sure you hit that subscribe button. Want to collaborate on something? Have a story that you want to tell? Have feedback for us? Then shoot us a message by heading to our website at www.btbs.ca. While you're there, you can follow us on social, read our blog, and also listen to past episodes. But above all, thank you for committing to moving beyond the bake sale.